convening this meeting late at night. And I think you should understand the very bad that is because of the late approval of the bill by the NCOT yesterday. And so we got the issues to waste a lot of time in trying to do the bill. So as far as I've been informed, there are only three issues that I'm not sure. Advocate Jenkins will guide us. So I think there are many three. So this meeting should take us more than 30 minutes. 20 minutes is going to be approximately time. Advocate Jenkins.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. New IT challenges within there. Indeed, yesterday I had an informal brief on this. I will repeat what I said yesterday, maybe just add a little bit. There are indeed three issues. And the first one is changing of the name of oversight mechanism of joint committee to oversight mechanism. Maybe I will work off the D list, the A list, and the short document. So if I see there, one looks at the first part of the arrangement of sections. So there's just an amendment to the name of the chapter. One looks in the board, it'll be the name of the chapter from Joint Committee to Oversight Mechanism. And then one sees the same with other chapters, like Chapter 2. Look at section 54 on school of the chapter heading 54, also submission of reports to the oversight mechanism. So those are just the technical changes, if I can call it that. I mean, all the rest stays the same.
Because I've been informed that the word oversight mechanism, that's what is contained in the constitution or in the rules. I'm not sure, can you let us?
Thank you, Chair. No, that is contained in the Constitution. If one looks at the Constitution, it says Parliament must have established oversight mechanisms to maintain oversight over the executive authority, including implementation of legislation. So that's where that comes from. And that has been used in other legislation. The best example is the Public Audit Act, which says we must have oversight mechanism. And that oversight mechanism is what we know today as the Committee on the Public on the Auditor General, or some standing committee on the Auditor General, the Committee on the Auditor General. So that's why we call it a textual amendment. It doesn't change anything to the meaning of that. And if I can be allowed there, the whole bill is, of course, full of this reference to committee, joint committee, and so on, and that has now all been changed to oversight mechanism. I'm not sure if the committee wants me to go through each and every one and indicate where it is.
Get guidance from them. Do you want to touch it yourself with the time of detail?
I would actually, the reason I would do that is not to save time. This is probably the last time I'll be working with this specific committee before the next. I would like to take a long time. Enjoy the time. Yeah, with each other. No, but actually we want to look at the other amendments which are more substantial and just need discussion and the committee wants. So the first one there would be the functions of this oversight mechanism. One is looking at clause 4. Clause 4, there's of course the name changes, etc., and then there's an omission of paragraphs A and B. Now, paragraphs A and B in the original version of the book says that this Joint Committee of Oversight Mechanism must consider drafts of the strategic plan, annual performance plan, budget, adjustment budget, and draft revisions of the approved allocations from Parliament's own funds that are submitted to Parliament in terms of Section 17. So that's your adjustment budget, also of your unspent funds. And B was then considering the strategic plan, annual performance plan, and budget tabled in Parliament in terms of Section 17. the first of all, one must read it with 17:1, and I'll get to that. But what was happening, or how this was looked at the Select Committee was to say, okay, this is now a specific function of the Joint Committee. But when we look at the heading of Clause 4, it says the Joint Committee must maintain oversight of the financial management of Parliament by, amongst other things, then considering the draft of the strategic plan and then the strategic plan. In fact, that has not got to do that much with oversight of financial management. Oversight of financial management, one is more interested in terms of what we see is happening at the Committee on Public Accounts in your annual reports, in your audited financial statements and in your audit reports. So that was one point of the motivation to remove that. The other point, which is more important in my opinion, when one looks at Chapter 3, Budget and Planning, specifically Clause 13. Clause 13 says the executive authority must oversee the preparation of Parliament's strategic plan, annual performance plan, budget and adjustments budget in accordance with this chapter and then table those in Parliament. Okay. So one is then left with the question, if the executive authority is responsible to oversee the preparation of these up to the point of submission to the National Treasury, what role would the Joint Committee or the oversight mechanism play in it? And to remove that confusion or remove that question, that's taken away paragraphs A and B of Clause 4, that is the consideration of the draft and strategic plan and so on. I might just add that, as you know, a committee which must consider something, it implies that the committee must report to the House by then saying, well, we've looked at the draft strategic plan of Parliament, we find the following, we want to report on certain issues we're concerned about, or we're looking at your budget. That in itself then, right, you know, what role does the executive authority play, seeing that they cannot be members of this oversight mechanism? What does this bill then mean when they say the executive authority must oversee the preparation of these documents? So it is a confusion that needs to be sorted out one way or the other. The way the Select Committee argued around it to come up with the amendments was to say that there's a budget preparation process which is supported in the bill in terms of the executive authority overseeing the process and then submitting it to the National Treasury, establishing the Parliament and submitting it to the National Treasury. Let's keep with that. So that's A and B and the motivation for that. If the committee can allow me now, I want to go to Clause 17 because the...
This is so relevant point. And the other point is different from this one. Right? Can you maybe ask a question on this one? I think clarity.
No, go ahead.
The obvious question for me is then, what is then the task of this oversight mechanism? Because clearly the objective, as I read it, and I must, you know, try to remember how we have argued and debated this, is that this, call it this oversight mechanism, must at least have insight into the strategic plan to also inform that or advise on that, at least that, you know, that you've got something that you can that you can make sure that what you have got oversight over is not just in terms of what other people want you to do, but is actually what in terms of what you should do to in terms of a prudent fiscal or prudent financial management and principles. So that's my question. You know, what is this mechanism then supposed to do? In other words, you know, must they just get an instruction? Must they get guidelines and basically be a rubber stamp, or must they apply their minds and say, you know, in terms of the manage this bill, what are the people supposed to do? What are they supposed to look at? Or is it just a so-called audit committee?
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for that question. There is a provision, of course, for an audit committee in the bill, the unconscious, which is the same as any other audit committee that is part of the financial regulations of government institutions, public entities, etc. The specific task of the oversight mechanism will be to consider the financial management, and in that they will then consider first and foremost the annual report. Part of that annual report will be your financial statements and the Auditor General's report on those financial statements. If one looks at clauses 55 and 56, you'll see what must be contained in those financial statements. There's also provision that must be based on the performance plan. So what is envisaged for the oversight mechanism to play a role similar to what SCOPA is playing vis-a-vis other government departments and public entities listed in the PSMA and that the Auditor General makes reports on. So it's not the role of an audit committee. And on top of that, of course, it must look whenever those instructions are made by an executive authority to do something that has financial implications and which is outside the budget or which might lead to unauthorized expenditure. Those must also be tabled with the Auditor General and with the oversight mechanism. The fact that one would like to refer to something like, I'm not sure one would like to refer to a strategic plan to do oversight over financial management, but let's say one wants to. Nothing will stop this oversight mechanism to look at that strategic plan and to ask questions. But the question, the sort of the ambit of the functions of the oversight mechanism will be similar to SCOPA, for instance. SCOPA does not have the mandate from the National Assembly to sit and question the Department of Defense about whether the equipment they have procured is the right equipment for their job. That is the portfolio police and defense. SCOPA can, however, say your procurement system that you've used doesn't comply with the PFMA, doesn't comply with the Treasury regulations. The Auditor General says, we want to ask you, what are you doing to correct those problems? And that is the role of the oversight mechanism to come in there. The issue of the policy statement and policy direction of Parliament, that in terms of this bill,
or in terms of the amendment bill, the B version of the bill, what I'm talking about is now with the presiding officers, which at this point in time is then advised through a multi-party mechanism called the Parliamentary Oversight Authority. Now this is in terms of the rules of Parliament. So if one wants to change that, one can change the rules to see whether there's another way. If one can recall a few years back, the Joint Rules Committee played a huge role in this kind of policy direction of Parliament. Now, the Joint Rules itself has got a similar mandate, but in terms of formulating policy, but giving the policy directives now has now moved, in terms of the rules, to the Parliamentary Oversight Authority. So that kind of distinction is made in the amended bill, which was not in the original bill. But I think I'm going to answering, giving you a too broad answer now, because I think I've answered the question in the first minute.
Yeah, thank you very much. Just to follow up on that, if you, that A and B, you've referred to, you know, in terms of Section 17. Now Section 17 says that the executive authority must table in Parliament for referral now to this oversight mechanism. If we're taking out there that this mechanism cannot consider that, what is the purpose of 17, of the referral of these then to the oversight mechanism?
Well, I think according to this document that we have before us, the NCOP is proposing that the clause must be removed. I think so. 17.1. On clause 17, I think they're proposing that from line 48 to omit sub clause 1.
That's correct, Honourable Chair. I was going to go there before the question. If one looks at Clause 17, that referral of these draft documents to the Joint Committee or to the oversight mechanism, because now, of course, Totologists, and that's why the NCOP then decided to remove that and leave the rest, which is the process of submitting the budget and the performance plan to National Treasury for inclusion in the appropriation bill, of course, and the other documents that get stabled with the appropriation bill. So that's the line I wanted to draw to make the functions clear between the executive authority and the oversight mechanism. So that deals with the amendment to 17, if that's okay, Honourable Chair. I don't know if there's questions on that as well.
Okay, if no further questions, let's move on.
Honourable Chair and Committee, that is now the second amendment that was proposed, that was made by the NCOP. The third amendment, and the last amendment that the NCOP made, I have to take the committee back to Clause 7 of the bill. Clause 7 of the bill sets out the general financial management functions of the accounting officer. Now, when we did select Clause 7 with Clause 65, if I'm not mistaken, I'll get the right reference. Not 65, in fact, it is 62. No. Financial misconduct. 69, sorry. 69. Well, it's 69. It says it's on page 24 of the B version of the bill. Oh, no, that's the original one I have here. The B version would be... It's also on page 24 in the B version of the bill. If one looks at the B version, 69 sub 1A, it's an offense for the accounting officer deliberately or in a grossly negligent way contravene or fail to comply with the provision of Section 7. Okay, so it includes the whole of Section 7. So when one then goes to Section 7, one sees all the duties, the financial management functions of the accounting officer, which then is visited by a criminal sanction. And it starts with a broad one, the resources are used effectively, efficiently, there's full and proper records must be kept, must have efficient and transparent systems of financial management. Obligations relating to taxes, levies, and duties, and then E and F are the ones that the NCOP removed. Parliament has appropriate systems to manage the performance of its officials, and there are suitable training and awareness programs related to financial management for officials of Parliament. Now, those issues there are clearly management functions, important management functions. The NCOP felt, or the Select Committee felt, that those must be part of any kind of package of functions that your accounting officer must perform. But they don't belong in that section of duties that you can visit with criminal sanctions if you do not perform them. If you do not perform them, you're a bad manager and you should be fired, but you shouldn't go to jail. So therefore, I've decided to remove those two subclauses, E and F. Parliament has appropriate systems to manage the performance of its officials, so it's a performance management system, and there are suitable training and awareness programs related to financial management for officials of Parliament. So those would then be included in regulations that should be made to this Act. And they shouldn't be there to be enforced with a criminal sanction, in short. Honourable Chair, those are the three amendments that NCOP made.
Members, comments, questions, and let's take a view on this matter. Mr. Singh and Mr. Mare and Mr. Mguni.
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to throw this pun in the works, but when I asked my NCOP colleague what amendments they were considering in our caucus just now, she gave me a document dated 20th October from the legal advisor in the Office of the Auditor General. And I don't know if Advocate Jenkins has had sight of this and whether the committee took into account these comments by Advocate Thomas Haben, Acting Senior Manager, Legal Services. It deals with the number of clauses here. I just want to know if it has been considered or not, because I don't see any amendments in what is being proposed. Thanks.
It was considered. We even had a briefing session, a video link up with the Auditor General about that document. The committee considered, discussed it, and didn't incorporate any of those amendments. If you like, I did not bring my copy of that document. I still have it, but I'm very familiar with it. I can talk to it if you'd like me to. There's one or two things that the Auditor General highlights in it, but most of it is just general comments. And the one specific thing I remember was the issue of having access to the register of members' interests, specifically the confidential part, which actually has nothing to do with members. It has to do with members' family and their interests. And that is not an audit issue for the Auditor General. And it's something separate to this. So.
Mr. Murray?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to come back to that 17 and that first one. If you read the... I just want to have clarity for myself. If you read right in the beginning of the bill, amongst others, to ensure that all revenue, expenditures, assets and liabilities of Parliament are managed efficiently, effectively and transparently, to provide for the responsibilities of persons entrusted with financial management in Parliament, to provide financial management norms and standards for provincial legislature, and to provide for matters connected herewith. Now, obviously, that 17 says that, you know, there will be no referral to this oversight mechanism now anymore. So how would they then do that job and making sure that it was managed efficiently and effectively and transparently? They would develop norms and standards and matters connected therewith. How would they then do their job if that cannot be then or will not be referred to them?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. One looks at Clause 4B. Clause 4, that is now the old version. So I'll just go to that. That will be now 4B. Joint Committee or the Oversight Mechanism must consider the annual report submitted to Parliament. Now, the annual report in terms of Clause 55 must be based on the annual performance plan. So, obviously, to make that judgment call for the committee, they will have to have insight into the performance plan. The budget itself is, of course, an open document. It forms part of the appropriation bill, and it will have to be in your annual report. So the issue of transparency and so on for the oversight mechanism, I think the question is, will they have all the documents that is necessary for them to perform that function, to open up all the books of Parliament so that we can see what's happening in there, must be considered in light of that, point one. Point two, one must also see that in terms of clause 4.4, the oversight mechanism has the powers of committees of Parliament have under sections 56 and 69 of the Constitution, which empowers them to summon any document or person to appear before them to give evidence. Okay, so that is also there. So they can get access to everything if it isn't given to them. I'm not sure if there's more. The thing that one can ask the question, what about the strategic plan? The strategic plan up to this point in time has always been part of the Parliament. It is an open document. You find it in many offices if one wants a copy of it and so on. So the question there is, if it's called either the committee, if this oversight mechanism can sign it to look at it, or one, through the political process within Parliament, through the senior whip sitting on the the Parliamentary Oversight Authority, the POA, or in the Joint Rules Committee to raise this issue. Those are open meetings.
Mr. Mguni?
Thanks, yeah. I think actually all three amendments, I don't think really they sort of watered down the bill and the accountability of the of Parliament or the Oversight Authority or the accounting officer. Though, as Architect has said, whatever information you need, actually, this committee, the committee will have all the powers, like any other committee, to summon and to get all the information they need. So I think we should just go ahead and post the bills.
I have no problem with your submission, but I'm just saying to members, well, I know it was not what we thought about originally. The current provisions, I agree with what the sentiment expressed by Mr. Wood, but I'm just saying a matter that has to be considered by the next parliament. The current provisions that we have in our bill, which are problematic in a way, as I'm listening to the NCOP submission, protected members from, for lack of better way, choice of words, I'll call it a conflict of interest. Let me give you a practical example. The Appropriations Committee of Parliament, the new one, is going to have powers to amend the budgets of all departments, including Parliament. So they'll be effectively amending a budget in their favor or whatever. You get me, the conflict of interest I'm trying to indicate, which is a matter that we can't resolve now, but we have to think about it and decide what we do about it, because it might have to reach a stage where, you know, we might have to think through how, as Parliament, we make inputs into the draft budgets of Parliament, because we are going to be sitting in that position where we have to amend all budgets, including that of Parliament, and we might be doing things in our favour, in our interest, and that might pose serious problems. I'm not saying that we have to resolve now. We have to think through the issue. It has those implications. The current provisions are problematic according to the NCOP. I can see, I mean, the sense of what the NCOP wants to do. Okay. They want to sort of shock Parliament, like, for lack of a better example, like a department, to say the Minister of Finance or the Minister of Home Affairs oversees that, is charged with the responsibility of overseeing the preparation of a budget. But then Parliament plays an oversight responsibility. I think they want to sort of saying that the presiding officers are like ministers. The Joint Committee shouldn't be involved in the draft budgets. They might be involved in overseeing. And I can follow the logic, but I'm just saying, in future, we need to think about this conflict of interest that I'm showing. I don't know, maybe it might not be a conflict of interest, but to me, if we have to start to increase the budget of Parliament as members of Parliament, it's another issue. Members, there's a submission from Mr. Mguni, and then I'll take Mrs. Mokoto and then Mr. Murray.
Okay, thanks. Good morning. I just want to check from Advocate Jenkins on the issue that was raised by Honorable Singh with regard to the Auditor General's proposal. You said that the members' interests are not a subject of audit. So maybe you can clarify me. Because in my own little experience, I know that is also an issue of audit in itself. Like if you deal with issues of procurement, you have to check also the issues of conflict of interest that might arise. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Jenkins, and then Mr. Murray.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Now, you're correct. The procurement issues feature very strongly there, but the members' register is an open document. The Auditor General has access to that. The submission from the Auditor General said that all documents must be provided in terms of the Public Audit Act. They must have access to any document.
Parliament has said, no, you must have the relevant documents, of course. The confidential part of the members, the register of members' interests, has nothing to do with what the member has or gifts that the member is receiving. It has to do with family members, spouses, children. Now, if one looks at the bill, there's a clause in the bill that talks about prohibition of contracts. Okay. And it says a member, amongst others, cabinet members, members of provincial legislatures, etc., but members of parliament are not allowed to contract with parliament. Neither can a company in which a member has a stake, a controlling share, contract with parliament. That is a, I can refer you to this clause. So the auditor can audit that without looking at the confidential part of the member's register. Because there's no prohibition of a spouse of a member contracting with parliament. If that member has a as an issue, or if that is a, what parliament has to do there, let me look at that specific thing, that's clause 46. If the auditor general wants to audit what parliament has contracted with, and whether we've complied with clause 46, specifically whether a member has contracted with parliament or a member has a controlling share in an entity that's contracted with parliament, the auditor general can look at the register of members' interests that's open. The auditor is not going to get anywhere by looking at the confidential part of that. That is the argument.
Mr. Marie?
Maybe as a question of follow-up, Chairperson, like, I think the experience has been there are instances where staff also do contract. Maybe we should check against the limit that we have set for ourselves, because the issue of conflict of interest is not a matter that only affects members of parliament. It's an issue that affects all, that would be like managing the issues of procurement. So in a way, I'm trying to suggest that we should open it up a bit to be inclusive of staff. That part that you referred to that relates to the members' interests and the declarations thereof, maybe it's another aspect outside or linked, but in a you know, remote way. I think the part that comes into the picture is a part where there is direct interest, like in that matter that would be at I don't know how to phrase it, but you know the interest that would be it's not an interest that has to be declared. Like, you can declare a company, but your company might not be interested in doing the business. But there must be a form of declaration that has to be undertaken by people who are especially involved in that exercise.
Members, what Ms. Mkhodra is saying is critical, but let's bear in mind that there are three amendments that are coming from the NCOP, and we have to apply our minds exclusively to those three amendments. And if there are any other critical issues, we can put them as a recommendation as we adopt the bill to say we recommend that the next parliament should look into these issues, because we couldn't resolve them at that stage because of this constraint that I'm talking about. Because now we are requested only to look at only three recommendations from amendments from the NCOP. Any other amendment that we want to effect now is not allowed because of the rules. We have to stick to those three because we did something contrary to the rules. Ms. Forbes, and then and Mr. Murray. Mr. Murray first, and then Ms. Forbes.
Chairperson, I can still understand why 4A and B must be reconsidered. But why 17.1 must be omitted, I fail to really understand why. Because what we have done is really to capacitate this committee to say that, you know, there's certain things that they must basically look at. to acquaint themselves with what they are busy with. Now we can say that, you know, these can be, they can be summoned and we can, you know, get everything that we want. But with all due respect, if the committee then don't apply their mind properly and they don't ask these things, it means that they wouldn't know. And we have had debates and arguments on why it was important to have these so many days or a month in advance to acquaint themselves. Now we say they don't have to have it anymore. I think we're compromising the whole committee or the task of this oversight mechanism, severely in my opinion, to decide in advance that there's certain things that they don't necessarily have to have. Whilst it was our arguments at that stage, they must have this to acquaint themselves. You actually want to force them to acquaint themselves, so, you know, this is a job that you must do. These are the things that you must look at. These are the things that you must be aware of. Otherwise, you can't do your oversight job properly. And now we want to take away that. And I fail to see the argument and the merit of taking away 17.1, with all due respect.
Let me just try to explain the rationale of Mr. Jenkins would help me. I think the rationale of the NCOP, you know, though I'm turning into two, that the rationale of the NCOP is to say, remove the oversight mechanism of the Joint Committee from preparation of budgets. Let it remain, the preparation of budget, let it be, that responsibility be overseen by the presiding officers. But when it's time for Parliament to account, Parliament, like any other department, will have to bring a strategic plan, would have to bring the annual report containing the audited statements from the AG. I think that's the way they argue it. But I'm not sure that's what we prefer. But I think that the argument is that remove Parliament, the Joint Committee, from the preparation of the budget. And then, when it comes to accounting, they should appear before this Joint Committee, like a department is appearing before a portfolio committee, to account for the annual report and that has to be accompanied by the strike plan or whatever. But I think we have to take a decision on that. Let's discuss it and Ms. Swab.
Thank you, Chairperson. Like I said, unfortunately my car was booked in and then the debate, so I do apologize. I had to just hang on a little bit for the little car. But thank you for your understanding. Chairperson, I'm now, the way you just explained this aspect, I'm kind of on board. That was the first part of my question. Where are we? Are we on page 10, clause 17? And I think that's exactly what you were referring to.
The point that Mr. Marais raised is dealing with two clauses, which are related. It's clause 4, 1, and clause 17, 1.
Right.
Okay.
Now, that is what I want to comment on, Chair. You know, when one looks at this, certainly the concept of oversight over the financial management is something we do anyway, if you like, indirectly. But it would appear that we should engage further on the concept of separating the structure that prepares a budget from the structure that exercises the oversight. There would appear to be some merit in that. And that's my contribution while I catch up to comrades and colleagues.
You're quite sharp, ma'am. Mr. Blankets, do you want to make a further comment on this matter?
As usual, I would like to agree with the Honourable Member. No, that is correct. The way you set it out, Honourable Chair, the thinking of the Select Committee is also correct. I would want to say it as well, or to add to that, that one must look at what is contained in the annual budget. there's a requirement that it's a three-year rolling budget, also for the two subsequent years of the budget. So you see where Parliament is going with its funds. And the comment you made earlier about how are we going to prevent this conflict of interest from members by amending the budget when they benefit from that same budget. When I remember the provisions of that money bills amendment procedure, now there's clearly connected to oversight. So there's a prerogative on this oversight mechanism to engage properly with the documents that is given and then to request those documents that is not given or summon the documents which the Parliament doesn't want to give. So within that context, then they will have to come up with resolutions to say there's a problem with Parliament's budget. For instance, and it's not mentioned, it's something that I advise the Select Committee against, the issue of unspent funds. How does Parliament use its unspent funds? This bill makes provision that Parliament retains its unspent funds. Remember, that is something that comes from the PFMA. So it's a present position that's continued in this bill. Now, there was a lot of discussion on that in the Select Committee. And there's specific provision in section, I think it's 56, how one must report on all unspent funds. Preparation of financial statements. Let me just see. Material of the preparation of annual reports. Well, I'm just trying to find the specific provision, but there's the question is you have to disclose all those funds, your own revenue sources, which includes your unspent funds. Okay. So the Select Committee is unhappy with that, but when a Parliament wants to do something with the budget, they will have to base that on some kind of resolution that's coming from this oversight mechanism. And I personally think that, as Mr. Honorable Mguni has said, that there's no watering down of the accountability issues in the amendments that the NCOP has made. That's not legally. I'm not talking about any policy issues. Thanks.
Dr. George and Ms. Mugato.
Thank you, Chair. I remember we spent a long time discussing various things in this bill. And one of the key things was that the understanding that Parliament was an entity, an unusual type of entity, and therefore needed to be treated in that specific way. It is not just another department. It's Parliament. It is a different thing. And therefore, that is how we approached what we put into this bill. And I think that when we consider the changes that have been made, we must bear that in mind. Is that I don't think in the mind we were saying, well, Parliament is just another department. It isn't like that. So that's just the point that I wanted to make. Thank you, Chair.
Ms. Mugato.
Chairperson, I want to differ with a proposal. Because I think...
Which proposal?
Of the removal of Clause 17. Okay. Because of the new rule that Parliament has set itself. For instance, like, there are two rules that we have to play, and like there are no limits to oversight, especially after we have said that we want to amend the money bills. It is not wrong for the executive authority to bring a draft to Parliament for it to consider it, whether it complies with the fiscal framework that we have adopted. Maybe let me use that thing, né? The framework that we might have adopted. So for us as parliamentarians, né, we'll be having the draft, adjustment. Né? And then if we have that draft adjustment, draft budget, né? And then that budget will be coming from the authority. So as Parliament, it doesn't mean that it's only the authority that will draft the budget. They will draft the budget and bring it as a draft. In the same way that we receive a draft budget from National Treasury. And having taken into consideration the changes that we have made to say that Parliament can now make adjustments into the budget, we will still be having that role as Parliament to make adjustments in terms of, especially after taking into consideration the spending patterns and all these other things that would be that would have been looked into, that we would have looked into, say for instance, if Parliament understands, we will have to check whether it will be possible, it will be, there's a need for us to cut the budget. If Parliament has underspent somewhere, maybe we should shift the money somewhere. Like we have, that is the main role that we have to play in terms of checking. That is the oversight role that we have to take as parliamentarians to make sure that we are able to check whether the money is being used effectively and, you know, we get the value for it. The second part that comes into the picture is the issue of the joint committee. For instance, if you read the deadline that NCOP is suggesting that we must take out, it says the executive authority must table on page 10, 17.1, it says the executive authority must table in Parliament for referral to the joint committee. So it means that the executive authority would have drafted the budget and then presented to Parliament, and then after Parliament has dealt with it, it will refer it to the joint committee. Where in Parliament's role would have been to amend the strategic plan or to make sure that they are able to keep in check whether the strategic plan is being implemented the way, you know, they have set objectives for themselves, and then to check whether the budget is being adhered to, money well spent effectively, and we achieve value for money. We think that framework would, as Parliament, we would take a decision whether to amend. After those amendments, we send that to the Joint Committee, whereby the Joint Committee will start doing its work. I think that thing, it is all this part of Section 4. I must read it carefully and then come back carefully. because I thought the Joint Committee will just exercise the oversight and report to Parliament. Because that joint committee is a joint committee of the two houses. So that is the role that must be played by the two houses. Chairperson, thank you.
Let me just reiterate the two arguments so that we should yeah. come to a point where we have to take a decision whether we reject the bill or we adopt it. I think when we met, I mean, some of these things might no longer be that fresh in my memory. They also complain that members of Parliament are not involved at all in the preparation of the budget of Parliament. And I think that was the argument then,
yeah.
that we don't have any input in the preparation of the budget of Parliament, and hence we put this process that time. The argument of the NCOP is that members should get out of the preparation or making any inputs into the budget of Parliament. Let it be the prerogative of the presiding officers who. I'm respecting the arguments so that we should not make a decision, a firm decision. Yeah. So that it should be the prerogative of the presiding officers to oversee the preparation of the budget, and then take the budget to the National Treasurer, to interact with the minister according to this act. After the preparation of the budget, overseen by the presiding officers, then they have a consultation with the Minister of Finance. What they have agreed upon with the Minister of Finance then would hold, but members are not involved in that process. Their role is just to oversee the implementation of that budget. Our original argument was that we don't want to see that process is inadequate for us. We want to be involved in the preparation, to make comments in the preparation of the budget of Parliament. So members, that's the issue. I think it's not as it's not a difficult decision to make. It's a yes or no, and then when you talk about it, I'm adopted it or rejected it. I think that's Mr. Jenkins.
Well, Chair, I don't want to hold you up unnecessarily, but just to point out that the bill passed by the National Assembly that states, and it still states, that the executive authority, I'm referring to clause 13 on page 9, the executive authority oversees the preparation of Parliament's strategic plan, annual performance plan, and budget and adjustments budgets. Okay, so that was the original thing. And what I said earlier, where I agree with Honourable Member Fubbs, is that one confuses things a little bit when one says you must refer your draft budget and the other documents to the oversight mechanism. Because the question that arises, and I'm speaking from my perspective, the question that I would receive in my office from the committee, for instance, would be, what do we do with this now? The bill says, or documents have been referred to us in terms of legislation. What does the committee do? Now, the bill doesn't go into details there. It just stops short. But it does say, and it's a bit of a pathologist statement in 4, 4A and B is saying the same thing. Mm. Now, if you read 4A and B, it refers both to actually 17.1, and 17.1 speaks of drafts. Okay. Mm. And it says you must consider those drafts. And one can only then say you must report on what you've considered and what your opinion is. Now, that is getting involved in the budget preparation stage, and one then says, well, how can the bill in one stage envisage that, and in the other stage one to say the executive authority must oversee this? Now, that's the one side. The other side is when you do the oversight of how the finances were spent. And I've said it again, there's actually another point I must make. These documents will be available, and it should be available to the oversight mechanism. If Parliament wants to amend its own budgets, in any case, they'll have to have all these documents in terms of the money bill. The last point I wanted to make, Honourable Chair, is just the budget process at this point in time. This point in time, as the bill states, the administration prepares a draft budget, gives it to the executive authority, who takes that draft budget to the Parliamentary Oversight Authority. And although that is not a huge committee, it is a multi-party forum. The Parliament Oversight Authority, the POA. Yes, it is involved in the preparation of the budget.
Not formalizing what's happening currently.
No, it's not. Because the Parliament Oversight Authority is nothing like the Joint Committee or the oversight mechanism that this bill wants to establish. It is made up in terms of the rules. It is a joint mechanism. But, of course, the executive authority is part of, very much part, they chair, the speaker and the chairperson chair the Parliament Oversight Authority. And after the budget has gone through that, it goes to the budget forum, which is a forum made up of administrators of Parliament, top management team, as well as members of Parliament, chief whips of the two houses and so on. And thereafter, the budget gets finalized and taken to the Treasury. So that is how I understand the budget process. I'm not at the finance office. So I spoke to the Secretary of Parliament about how it is done at this point in time. And that, in my view, is what Clause 13 wants to keep by saying the executive authority must oversee this process, and then we will call the executive authority and the accounting officer to the oversight mechanism to account.
Mr. Murray and Mr. Singh, Ms. Fobbs, Mr. Your hand is up.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say I don't think we have to debate 4A and B. We've accepted that, Advocate Jenkins. You haven't responded to my arguments on 17.1. You've responded to the Honourable Fobbs, not to mine. I still have the opinion that by omitting 17.1, all you're saying is you don't have to disclose information. The onus is now on the committee to make sure that they get the information. Whilst we have said you must disclose the information, you must let them know, you know, what was the arguments, where this has come from, so that they know the background to this. Now they don't have to disclose the information. Second thing, if you look at this coming from NCOP, I see that 17, the heading is still the same, and there's no drafts anymore, so that's anyway wrong. The heading of 17.
Yes.
There's still submissions of drafts.
Yes.
So that's anyway wrong.
Yeah.
So what I've accepted is anyway wrong. It's not correct.
So the effect of is that even if you remove 17 one,
yeah, it's wrong.
The heading would still remain.
That's what
ends. Yeah. No. I'm following what you say.
I mean
that. Yeah. Sitting with the problem. Let me swap and then to go to Mr. Mbili.
Chairperson, I think that we should be Mr. Singh. Well, you know, my qualities lie a little deeper than beauty. But, Chairperson, I was going to just mention that anomaly, but rather hope that one would just deal with that as a technicality. But the second aspect, Chair, you see, when we think of when this was drafted and when it went through, we must keep two things in mind. There was an almost parallel development and process of the amendment of money bills and this, although this had a longer life. Now, it's quite possible that something may have happened to the quality, you know, during this long life. Now, I believe when that happened, a number of us may have been thinking, we currently don't have the amendment of money bills. That was the future. We could not guarantee we had it. It wasn't even passed or near finalization. So the question at the beginning of seeing drafts by an oversight committee corresponds a great deal to things like the Money Council, not the Money Council, what is it, the Budget Council and so on, where one has that opportunity to push through a few things, the MTBPS, all of these other factors. But I think once you've got your amendment to money bills, unless we're now going to learn that we wouldn't be allowed to amend the budget once tabled. I'm just saying that. It would appear as if issues such as drafts to begin with may not be necessary for an oversight mechanism. So that was the first thing. The second thing, Chair, I did understand from someone here that as chairperson you had reached a position where we passed this part. And I just want to clarify if there's any point in returning.
We're still busy deliberating on it, yeah. Mr. Mbili.
Thanks, Chair. A mention was made, I think, yesterday, that a question of a referee and a player at the center. Somebody raised an issue which says, why do you want to be part of the process from the inception while at the same time you have this oversight mechanism at your disposal? I think that is the issue here. And I thought the advocate will talk to that specifically with the legal side of it.
Mm.
Because somebody knows that very sharply that you do have an oversight of the whole process with a lot of power. Then why then do you want to be part of the process, the same process which you have an oversight on? I got to be the advocate. We'll talk to that, because when that is addressed, I think this argument will just fall away, because you have that oversight here. But then the advocate will know that we have to be part of the perception of the whole process, not the process, right at the end of the day. That's another power to oversight. Or, you know, the Maya view that that oversight has the power even to amend or to change it. At the end of the day, if the oversight might tell you that it's just a basis, well, what happens to 1, 2, 3? There's a power to amend it. So the question I'm asking, because I thought you would talk strongly, because I think it will assist us moving forward. Thank you.
Mr. Mbili is raising a very critical question that we need to pay attention to. Mr. Mbili is saying we have got this oversight power that we can exercise over Parliament, but we have got this other power that we still wield to can change the budget of Parliament the way we want to. So therefore, it will not even be necessary for us to consider the draft budget of Parliament, because we have got the power to amend the power to amend the budget of Parliament if when it appears before the Appropriations Committee. So I think that makes sense. I don't think it will water down anything. If we're exercising oversight over how Parliament is implementing the budget, but at the same time we've got the power to decide whether to increase or decrease the budget of Parliament, I don't think this bill in any way would water down anything. I would love to persuade members to think it that way. We have Mr. Singh. Members, I think we are coming to Mr. Jenkins.
Sorry, Honourable Chair, I just thought that Honourable Member wanted me to say something. I understand that. That's a very important governance principle, that you clearly define your responsibilities vis-a-vis your accountability in a business, including public business like Parliament, public body or organ of state, as they say in the Constitution. So the problem, also trying to address the specific question of Honourable Murray on this, is that when you say in legislation, your draft must be referred to a committee. I mean, let's assume that for IMB is gone. It creates the impression, I'm not speaking about the creates the impression of people sitting here, I'm talking about creates the impression of an academic reading the book, or a member of the public reading the book, to say, well, if this must be referred in draft form to a committee, what is the purpose? And I said before, there's no purpose set out in the book. So one of them has to come up with an assumption. And that assumption, well, the first one that comes up in my mind is, they need to make input into that draft, and that draft must then go back to the executive authority, who then must submit it to the National Treasury. So what creates the impression that the executive authority, although the board say you must oversee the preparation, the executive authority becomes a messenger, a carrier of that report of the committee. And then one gets into the confusion of the roles of accountability. Who can be held accountable? And that is a danger in many things that has to do with oversight, because one don't want to sit there and say and ask a question to the executive authority why a certain amount of money was spent or wasted or however one wants to frame it, and return with an answer, the committee is asking this question has actually drafted that final budget. Mm-hmm. I was just executing what you said. That doesn't help oversight. That is not accountability. There is an environment in that. And this is what the intention was, to remove those. Just a short point, and I can continue if there's a follow-up question. I hope I've addressed some of the issues at least.
I think the point by Mr. Billy makes quite a lot of sense. I stand on the side of the institution, but you also have the power in the procedure to amend my bill to decrease or increase the budget of Parliament if you are not happy with anything.
Just short on the 17. 17, where we're still talking about drafts. I think that was an oversight.
Yes.
But it does not, in law, the heading of a provision in law doesn't actually determine the meaning unless there's a confusion within the book. That's how the courts have interpreted the headings of provisions. So,
quick question. If we're doing away with 17.1 and we delete the heading, does it raise any problems? Is that not just a technical cleaning up of the bill?
I don't think it's a technical issue. technical amendment, is it going to change the meaning of the bill? If not, then one can make that technical. But one obviously limits those kind of things. I mean,
members, I think we have to draw to a close and make a decision on this bill.
Sure.
Can we? I'm not sure. I'm in your hands, man. I rely on you. Do I have to just close by close and then come to this?
What can we do?
You
can do it.
Okay. No, that's fine. I'm informed that I can read the report. The report is about formal committee on finance on the financial management of Parliament Bill, dated 19 February 2009. The portfolio committee on finance, having considered the financial management of Parliament Bill, amended by the National Council of Provinces, referred to the committee report that the committee agrees with the amendments. Agreed?
Agreed.
Okay. Agreed. Members, I think we are done with the process. Hope to see you on the election trail, on the election campaign. Okay, no, come on again. Okay.